This is Jerome Aginla, and you're listening to Get the Puck Out.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back.
Welcome back.
Oh, yeah, man, how you doing?
Come on,
you good?
Come on. I know you like that.
Yeah, good.
I know you like that.
How long you been back, man?
Welcome back. I see the girls in the club, they're getting wild for me. And all the pretty chicks all want to smile at me. These rap.
All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of Get the Puck Out, presented by the brand new TarpsOffHockey.net. I just launched my own hockey website today, so anyone listening to this, go on over to www.TarpsOffHockey.net. And to celebrate a big day, we bring a big guest on here, and this guy has done everything in the NHL outside of score a Game 7 winning goal. Here we have Doug McLean in the house from beautiful PEI, one of the most beautiful parts in all of Canada. Doug, how are you today, my friend?
Doing great. Just painting the foundation. I mean, it's a great job. I didn't know I was so handy.
Yeah.
Till you once you spend 14 days in quarantine, you realize how handy you become.
That's right, man. Exactly. All of a sudden, you got to tinker with everything. And you said you were doing some renovation around the house. We definitely appreciate you coming in. But I definitely want to talk to you now because last night, NHL draft lottery goes down. And the number one pick goes to be determined. I never even knew that was an option going into this. I just didn't think that was going to happen. You definitely feel for the Red Wings. But what are your thoughts on the way that the draft lottery played out? Do you think it's good or bad for the league? Because I don't feel so great about it.
Well, look, it started in 1995, and they've tinkered with it umpteen times trying to fix it. And obviously it started because of teams tanking. You know, most older people remember when the Devils and the Penguins, you know, tanked so they could get Lemieux, and how did that work out? I mean, it worked out great for the Pens, but and so they've tried to fix it numerous times. So then this is the great fix this year. So what they do is they bring in 8 new teams into the playoffs that probably shouldn't have been in most of them, or at least a good number of them, you know. So all of a sudden they make the lottery, the bottom 7 teams that didn't make the playoffs and didn't get the play in, but they take the play in teams in. So let's say there's 8 play in teams, or 8, there's 16 play in teams, but there's 8 that shouldn't have been in there. So the losers of the play in now all go into the lottery, and they give them each 2.5%. So you don't think anything of it. Okay, Pittsburgh has 2.5%. You know, Toronto has 2.5%. And all these teams that do the play-in get 2.5%. All of a sudden, that 2.5% times 8 becomes approximately 20%. So you know going in that
– bigger chance than Detroit had at the first.
Yeah, one of these 8 teams have a combined – one of these 8 teams are going to have a very good chance to be the team. And whoever watches a lottery, NFL or whatever, a lottery show, Sportsnet do a show last night, NBC do a show, and all of a sudden you don't have a winner? Like, are you kidding me? You sit there for an hour. We know they didn't have, you know, and you don't have a winner. Like, we've got now 8 teams that go into a lottery with about 12% each. The losers of the first play-in round, each of them will have about 12.5% to win it. It's bizarre. And I mean, I don't get why they continually do this to themselves. You know, put the bottom 7 in, let them fight for the lottery pick from Detroit on down. But no, they got to tinker and they got to put the play-in teams in and all this BS. And now they've got a mess on their hands.
Doug, it seems like they should have just let the bottom 7 teams fight for first overall. And if one of the play-in teams that lose, you know, have them fight for picks 2 or 3, sure, maybe, but they should have had a definitive number one winner last night. And that's my opinion on the matter.
Yeah, it just makes no sense. And that's the frustrating part. But, you know, the team saw this going in and said, okay, just a minute. These combined 8 teams that lose all have as good a chance as we have. And, you know, now you don't think of it as being a combined group, but that's what it turns out to be. A combined group become the number one pick, and they get the 8 losers who were all better than these previous teams that were in the lottery last night, all of them with better records are going to have a better chance of winning first overall. I don't get it.
It's a disaster.
I think the real problem stems from when you enter the 24 teams, what you were doing there was you were making sure that any team that had a fight in those last 8 or 10 games that we had left wouldn't have got screwed over. But then you have teams like Chicago and Montreal who probably don't belong, who would probably have rather just been in the lottery draft to begin with. Now, all of a sudden, you got these teams, you know, putting up a, well, you know, we want to be involved in the lottery. So now you got to take 6 other teams who were just, you know, a dog hair out of the playoffs. And now these 6 teams just have as much of an equal shot as probably the only teams. That's where I go is Chicago and Montreal. They deserve to be in the lottery, in my opinion. But the other 6 teams.
So Montreal should tell Carey Price just to stay in Kelowna for the first round. Leave him there.
ECHL goalie.
And then see if you got at least you have a pretty good, you got a 12.5% or so, whatever it works out to be, a chance to win, get Lafreniere with the first pick overall. So, you know, and I don't know. I just don't understand. But look, I experienced this in the Sid Crosby draft when we didn't play that year. The year before I was with Columbus and we had a tough year. Pittsburgh had a tough year and a few teams. And all of a sudden, everybody in the damn league has got a chance to get Sidney Crosby. So they set up the lottery. They gave us each 3 balls each, and they gave everybody in the league a ball so that every team in the league have a chance at Sidney Crosby. And I'm sitting there at the Board of Governors meeting saying, are you guys kidding me? Everybody's got a chance to get Sid, not the bottom 5 of us or the bottom 4 of us. Are you kidding? Anyway, and I end up with a 6th pick in that damn draft, Crosby draft. But anyway, that's just – my own opinion of it. To me, they've screwed it up since day one. And I'm actually doing a book on the draft and I've been working on it. My ghostwriter, Scott Morrison, sent him a tweet. I said, oh my God, how good is this for our book, this debacle? So anyway, it'll be fun chapter. To pick away at it. Anyway, fun. Go ahead, boys. I've been hogging it.
No. I just wanted to bring up, too, you brought up the Montreal Canadiens and talking about Lafreniere. What would the significance be of him going into Montreal? Imagine the pressure on that kid. But, I mean, he's a big-game player. I think he would relish it. But, that's the fact of the matter is now that they get to play in this playoff and they could have the first overall pick, you're right. It's a joke. Now, I do want to come on to here and talk about, you mentioned the new playoff format and there's teams that don't deserve to be there. Do you think they're going to be able to get this underway here, Doug? We see the United States breaking out with more and more COVID cases, and the league just seems set on having one U.S. destination and one Canadian destination. I don't understand why they won't just go to 2 Canadian cities. Like, you could do Calgary and Edmonton, could you not? Do you think they're going to be able to pull this off with everything we've seen in the NBA now and the WWE, even the wrestling? Those guys, I think they had 10-plus COVID cases, and we saw what happened with the Lightning as well. You think we're going to be able to get this off?
Well, it's really interesting. I talked to an insider yesterday. He said, Doug, I can't believe they're going to play. I talked to a president of a team yesterday, and he said, no, we're playing August 1st. So it'll be interesting to see. And the biggest challenge they have with doing a Vegas and an Edmonton or a Calgary and an Edmonton or one of is you've got time zones. You know, you're trying to get 5 games a day in. And you're trying to get TV audiences, so they've got to desperately try to get an Eastern team in there, an Eastern hub, I mean, in there, so that you can get primetime games. You know, that's you can always play early in the day. I get all that. But to get the major games of the day, you certainly would like to have primetime kind of. So, you know, it'll probably end up being one East, and it looks like it'll probably be a Toronto or a Chicago, and then one West of the – of or one of an Edmonton, Vegas, or LA. And it looks like Vegas seems to be the front runner, but you're right. You've got outbreaks now breaking out. I mean, look at the NBA. They go to Florida and they got a 9,000 cases in Florida yesterday. You've got Major League Baseball in Florida, Texas, Arizona, major outbreaks in every place. So
it's ugly.
It complicates it, no doubt.
I think that the big problem is that exactly as you said it, you've got primetime markets that are at least viewership hours that you want to engage. You got a 12 p.m. game that right. starts out in Vancouver, that's 9 o'clock. You're not really, you know, gaining into that, you know, huge beefy TV chunk hour. And if the NHL is trying to, you know, cash in on this, which obviously they are, which is why they're kind of pushing through here. But if you're looking for that prime, then you know what? Why not Toronto? And why not Vancouver or Edmonton and right. Toronto? Seems to me yeah. like anything in the States, and especially Nevada with them opening up their casinos now, it just seems too inviting.
Well, and that's going to be the challenging part. And you know, obviously health is a major priority. And now I get a kick out of that. I've been saying this for a month to my buddies. I said, guys, just wait. This is going to be more than about the virus before this is over. The owners want the TV deal. They want to get their $500 million in TV money or $350 million, whatever it is in TV money, by playing this format or by playing this playoff round. And all of a sudden, now we've got the players coming out saying, we're sick of supporting the owners with escrow. And now all of a sudden it's morphed into from the virus for the players' safety to the CBA collective bargaining agreement. So, you know, they're trying to get a 6-year deal. It's all about escrow. They want it fixed at 18% to 20%. They want a fixed cap. So there's some real, I'm wondering if there's Olympics in there. So this is morphed into a negotiation now, which
higher risk players, for the players, right? So they got to think about the money.
Yeah. The players have some leverage right now, and this is their chance to do it. Now, if they decide voting in the next 10 days or week or whenever it's going to be an independent vote and the players vote not to play, the leverage goes right back to Bettman, because all of a sudden, okay, boys, you're playing next year with a 35% escrow. That's where it is.
Yeah. And
so
that would affect,
you got to be careful, you know?
Yeah, that's a good
like
point.
Said, it becomes a negotiation almost, where they're leveraging things. And Doug, do you think this, no matter what, do you think the Players Association is going to like push everybody back? Or do you think that they'll give individual guys an option not to come back? We've seen Artemi Panarin voice concerns. You've seen Carey Price, as you mentioned earlier on the podcast here, voice concerns. Do you think this will be an optional thing? Or do you think once everything's agreed upon, like it's get your ass to the rink and get to work?
Look, I think it's a situation where if people have compromising health issues, they're going to have the right to bail out. We saw Stroman talking about his, you know, his situation. We got Max Domi, who has a diabetic problem. We've got, you know, certain players around the league, if they have certain health situations that could put them more at risk, obviously the league is going to allow them, and the independent teams are going to allow them to do whatever they want. It's really interesting. I talk to people in Boston. They tell me the Bruins really, really want to play. Why do you think the Bruins really want to play? Because number one, they got a chance to win the Stanley Cup. And number two, they've got a leadership group that's maybe the best in hockey. Then you've got the Vancouver Canucks. I talked to them this morning, a couple of people on their team, and they're dying to play because they're a little bit of an underdog. They think they have a chance to really make some damage now that Markstrom's healthy. So it's really an interesting dynamic. I hear lots of players really would like not to play, but it'll be interesting because they're going to get an independent vote. It'll be 700 or whatever number of players are in the league making a vote, and if it passes, they'll be playing, other than the guys with compromising health issues. And I don't think that should be entirely up to them.
Yeah,
and it will be. It will be.
Well, with, you know, the fact that with this whole pandemic, right, like every business is trying to get their foot back in the door and get things reopened, because businesses can't survive, you know, by sitting still too long. Now, I get that this to some might not seem like an essential service, and it's not. It's pure entertainment. But like any business, you know, they have to try to get things moving, because this isn't necessarily a problem that just extends throughout the summer. This is potentially something that we're looking at for next season and the following season. You know, if we don't have a vaccine for this thing, then this sounds like it's not something that's necessarily going to go away. So, you know, the cancel culture and the cancel pundits who are like, shut it down, end the season, just start it up next year. What happens when you open up training camp next year and three teams have a breakout and things start to happen? So this isn't like a short-sighted problem. This is something where the NHL at least has to try to figure this out, to see how they're going to navigate through this in the upcoming season, not only just now.
Well, you know, let's not kid ourselves. I mean, this has been a devastating health situation on many, many businesses. And you look at NHL owners, and yeah, they're wealthy people, but they are getting crushed, most of them, in their business, and they're getting crushed with their hockey operation. And the hockey operation is challenging enough to make money. And I was in the league 22 years. I know how tough it is to end up with a profit at the end of the year. Yeah, if you have a great franchise, yeah, but there's 10 or 15 teams in the league that have to scratch their ass to make it to break even. Yeah. So this 500 or 350 to 500 million that's sitting out there is pretty important to a lot of people, and it's important to the players because of an escrow point of view. So, you know what, it's best if they can play, but you know what, the health scare, I mean, if you're Bettman, there's a ton of pressure on you as an owner and you as Donald Fear to say, okay, we're going to play, and if something happens, it could be, you know, who knows? And nobody knows, and that's the problem. So I think they'll play. I think the players will vote for it, and I think it'll go ahead. And I just hope that it works out, number one, from a health perspective, and number two, that we see some good hockey.
Yeah, exactly, man. And one thing I wanted to say, too, it's like you've seen how urgent it is. Like I know that you had said someone told you, yeah, we're going to be playing August 1st. So you see today they've already eliminated more people from the being a location to be a hub city. But yeah, it's imperative to get these guys down there and get them quarantined now if that's going to happen. So have you heard any timeline on when the vote's going to come down or anything like that?
I haven't heard, but I got to believe it's going to be in the next, you know, if they're going to training camp July 10th, which may in fact be pushed back to July 15th because of this outbreak in the U.S., so it could be pushed back a little bit there. I've got to believe that this has got to be done in the next week at the latest. So I haven't got a specific date, but it has got to come sooner than later. And there's been a lot of debate amongst teams about it, so you know, we'll see where it all shakes out.
You know who I feel the worst for in this situation? Jack Eichel. The guy doesn't even get a chance to play, and he's completely out of the Lafreniere debate. Or, you know, like, if there was a team that needed that, you know, and this is where people get, when people say the NHL lottery's rigged, if it was rigged, it was going to be Detroit or Buffalo that got the pick. That's where I think.
No, and I mean, where did Buffalo end up picking?
Eighth, I think, right? Or dead last.
Yeah, they finished eighth, yeah. So yeah, I like Cole Perfetti there for them. That's probably who they'll end up getting.
Right. Thing. And now, well, Eichel's got a new GM, though, so that's one thing positive for him. He helped move that needle by getting a new GM in there.
Yeah.
See how that works out.
Botterell, he threw out that warning shot, and it was funny. Right before he said, you know, I'm sick of losing, this, that, and the other, the Pegulas came out and said, like, we have full confidence. Botterell's our guy. And then Jack sends out those waves and he gets fired. Do you create a dangerous precedent when you give a player that much power, or is someone like Jack worth it?
I don't know. Look, Jack Eichel's a great player. I don't know the history between Botterell, Pegulas. I know that they've had their challenges with former GMs. I mean, Timmy Murray goes in there. They move him out. They bring in an inexperienced guy in Bottle. They move him out. Now they bring in a really inexperienced guy in Kevin. So, you know, I don't know if they – I guess I would say, do they really respect the game when they're making some of these decisions? But, hey, it's their money. It's their call. I guess Kim and Mr. Pegula know what they're doing from a hockey's perspective. I mean, after all, what is it, 9 years in a row since they've made the playoffs?
Yeah,
since they took over the team, right?
I think it's – I mean, they've elapsed my record in Columbus, which I'm really proud of. So,
well, the thing, too, with – and you've seen the number of names that were let go from Buffalo. But you know, before Botterell was fired, I remember just talking, and I was just trying to ask, you know, some of the Buffalo fans that I know, like, when's the last time, you know, even like a second-round pick or a third-round pick, Panda? I know Victor Olofsson's the newest name, and, you know, good for them for finding him. He's a great find and a good player. But, like, you give me a fourth or a fifth-round pick that Buffalo's been able to develop over the last 8 or 7 years, like, I don't have any. You know, Jake McCabe, I think, was, you know, a third or a fourth-round pick. but and I don't want to, you know, step on him, but it just seems like the entire what they went through when they went through the 22 fire or the 21, the one was incorrect, but the, when they fired 21 people, it seemed like it wasn't just a message from Jack. It's got to be a wake-up call to the complete organization, because it's unacceptable to kind of tail along like this. And like, if you're the new guy stepping in, if you're Kevin Adams, I believe his name is, like, yeah, you have to fix this, or like Jack Eichel's going to want out, in my opinion. Like, you have to step in and fix this.
You know, I got asked to, you know, I had Kevin as a player in Columbus, took him in the expansion draft in 2000, and then we traded him to Florida for Ray Whitney. I really like Kevin. He's a nice kid. Nice kid when I knew him. I don't know. I haven't spent a lot of, you know, any time with him recently, but all of a sudden, you know, you're fixing a problem, but fixing a problem and bringing in total inexperience to a situation. So is it fixing a problem, or is it because you're frustrated with the amount of money you're spending and you're going on the cheap? So I don't know which way the Pegulas are going here, but whatever way it is, I'd be a little nervous if I was involved. And, you know, firing 22 people. Now I saw Kevin hired a couple of guys yesterday that have reasonable experience in scouting. So it'll be interesting. I mean, I hope it works out for them. You know, I hope it works out for the Pegulas, but it all starts usually at the top of an organization, and they haven't done a very good job, the Pegulas, in my opinion. So
look at the names that Buffalo brought in over the past couple of years. And this isn't the, you know, to crap on any players, but when you're trying to surround Jack Eichel with talent, you sign Jeff Skinner to this big deal, but then all of a sudden you take him off his wing, you throw him on the second line, you try to find some depth that you don't have, and guys like Jimmy Vesey just haven't panned out. Connor Sheary, great fit with Crosby, but to expect him to come into Buffalo and kind of carry a line himself was a bit much. Yeah. And then you add in the first-round picks that haven't developed, along with, as I mentioned later, you know, those late steals that you're not finding in the draft, then you're left with, you know, a bottom six where guys like Patrick Berglund, you know, don't even want to be a part of it.
But so if you're the owner of the Buffalo Sabres and you've got a situation that you've got your superstar not very happy and you can make it really uncomfortable, you're the Pegulas and supposedly you're worth a ton of money. I know the oil and gas business isn't very healthy right now, which is where a lot of his money is. But wouldn't you step back and say, okay, Timmy Murray, we brought him in. He had done a great job in Ottawa with drafting, picking Carlson at 15 and on with good picks there. Okay. Then they bring in Botterill, who was in Pittsburgh, limited experience, but had been with Ray when they won. But they had Crosby, Malkin, and they had a pretty good group there. So wouldn't you just step back as the Pegulas and say, okay, we're going to bring in a top guy, a big name top hockey guy to run our organization and to make the decisions. Wouldn't you go that direction versus going with an I like Kevin and I wish him nothing but success, but wouldn't you step back and say, okay, finally, what are we missing here? What are we really missing? We're missing somebody to come in and head up our entire organization who has had success in the NHL in the past. See, whoever it is, and I know, I mean, you see the John Davids and you got different guys around the league that have stepped in, and then they calm the organization down. They calm the waters and they start to hire people who they think can do a good job. But no, they decide to go with the most inexperienced guy that has ever got a GM job in the one of the most inexperienced guys in a long time. And I'm not knocking Kevin. If you get offered a GM job, you're jumping all over it.
Absolutely.
I don't blame him one bit for taking him. One bit. No,
definitely not. I don't either. But you see look what Edmonton did, finally getting out of the hiring just guys that played for them before, and they give Ken Holland the reins of the entire organization. And just look at the transition from last year to this year under Ken Holland's leadership. So you make a great point there.
I just don't get it. I don't get why they don't just step back. But, hey, you know, I don't know how this ever transpired, but it did. So now how does it go and how does it work out? I hope for Kevin's sake it works out really well, and it might. You never know. You know?
I have no problem hiring Kevin Adams here. It's what I've seen with the organizations that have really kind of stepped forward over the year, it really starts at the top. Look what the Leafs did when they kind of, you know, started to rebuild their regime. They got a team president in place. And that's where I'm getting at, is that I don't mind hiring Kevin Adams. If you've got a team president who can overlook things and oversight things and use his maybe knowledge and connections to hire guys, because I'm not saying Kevin doesn't know who to hire here. But, you know, when Yzerman took over in Tampa Bay, you know, Al Murray, he knew the guys to go to. And I don't know if Kevin's got those connections for the right places where a team president with his head on their shoulders might.
That's my whole problem. I mean, you like you say, the Toronto situation, but they brought in Shanahan and then they brought in Lou Lamoriello and they let Dubas train under him for 5 years. And Dubas had been in the OHL. But where's Kevin been working? Buffalo Junior Sabres? Like, where's he been? He's been in their administrative office doing some work. So that's my point. Why not go with a top guy and then build from there instead of putting in the GM and saying, okay, you're reporting to Kim Pegula. Like, seriously, give me a break.
I know. It's unbelievable.
Anyway.
It's unbelievable. You don't want to crap on the Sabres for too long, but I mean,
I'm more concerned about painting my foundation than I am about the Sabres.
That's right. And I was just going to bring that up, Doug. We don't want to take too much of your time. I know you're Tim the Toolman Taylor now out in PEI, fixing everything up, buddy. I'm glad that you made it back from Florida and got out of there before stuff really seems to take a turn here. I hope you have a great rest of your summer, buddy. I can't wait for hockey to kick back up, and I thank you for joining Get the Puck Out on the first day that I launched my new hockey website, tarpsoffhockey.net.
Hey, good luck with the continued good job with the podcast and good luck with the website. And thanks for having me on, guys. It was fun as usual.
Always a pleasure to have you guys. It's Doug McLean, former everything in the NHL. Take care, my friend.
Take care, bud.